Welcome to the first part of this four-part story, The White City, written by Patrick Neat and read by me, Brian Blessed. Part 1. The White City. King Philippe stood on the ridge above the White City just as the moon rose over the rocky outcrops on the far side of this man-made valley. This marked break of up was Philippe's favourite time. Philippe knew nothing of beauty, but if he had, he might have thought this the most beautiful thing his young eyes had ever seen. The tide of light that washed the city below in its cool gaze reflected off the pristine white structures in their symmetrical corridors, and called the smooths to work from their hidey-holes in the surrounding caves and woods beyond. Tonight, however, Philippe was pensive, and his eyes were fixed on the far end of the valley, where Electric Mountain was still growing, and his one-time bud, Baby Lonnie, busy building his own little empire. Citizens were now defecting almost daily, more than 20 so far, including seniors like Solly and Junior, and Randa, of course. They went over to the exile with all his promises of good grub, even though they knew there was no way back. Philippe shrugged. He couldn't really blame them, because Baby Lonnie could be quite the charmer when he chose. And besides, every dude needs to nosh. Philippe scratched his head, turned around, and looked off down the long tarmac that stretched to who knows where. He blinked and listened as hard as he could to see if he could make out the chug-chug-chug of Louis' old motor vehicle. Nothing yet. With the moon now high in the sky, the up's work was begun, and the smooths were lugging all the fruits of yesterday's labours to the side of the tarmac, sweating and swearing with the toil of it. And the timing of this cycle was an ongoing frustration. Since Louis would only ever come around this hour, it had to be like this. The smooths would work throughout the up, salvaging motors, pipes, bulbs and ceilings from the latest consignment of white skyscrapers. Then, when the birds began to cheep with the first light of day, they would squirrel them away to their stashers in the caves before they heard the great rumblings of the ogres' metal monsters, which arrived with the rising sun. Only when the ogres were long gone with the closing of up would the smooths re-emerge from their hideouts, bringing out their scavengings for King Philippe's vetting and then Louis' consideration. You see, nobody wanted to be around when the ogres entered the city. Those gigantic beasts with hairy lips and chins and hands big enough to squash you like you were a ripe piece of fruit. Once, a mouthy little character, who went by the name of Cripple because of her lame left leg, hadn't limped for the shadowed safety quite quick enough, and was spotted by an ogre who caught her by the wrist and dragged her into the midst of his fellows. The other smooths watched from the rocks, transfixed.
"Hey, guys," the ogre said, "look, I found myself an urchin."
Cripple screamed that they had to let her loose, but the ogres just looked at each other, completely bemused.
"What's she saying?" said one.
"Anybody recognise that language?"
Another knelt down and still towered over her like a tree. He smiled so wickedly that the watching smooths felt their stomachs somersault.
"You better come with us, little miss."
"Okay," he said. "You better come with us."
The ogres bundled Cripple into one of their metal monsters, and she was never seen again. Philippe recalled how powerless he felt when the ogres' monsters sped off down the tarmac. If he couldn't look after the citizens, then what kind of king was he? From the distance, Philippe finally heard the familiar sounds of Louis' motor vehicle. He checked down to where the smooth stash was stacked, and saw Chinky, his closest consort, puffing on a cig and watching him closely. He smiled at her. She always looked so forlorn in her ripped skirt and her grubby T-shirt with the American writing and the big tick on the front. She smiled back.
"You all right, Majesty?"
He nodded.
"Sure. You reckon we're going to get good stuff off Negro tonight? Smooth's getting kind of starvacious."
Philippe sighed. "Hope so," he said. Negro was what dudes call Louis because of his skin. So matte black, it seemed to swallow light. But Philippe, who was the only one who ever spoke to him, always addressed him by his proper name. Louis' three-wheeler eventually pulled up, and its owner dismounted.
"Evening, Majesty," he said.
Despite the full moon, Philippe still saw his teeth and eyes way before the rest of him. Only when he got a lot closer could Philippe check him out proper. As usual, Louis stuck out a hand and ruffled his hair. The king hated it, but what was he going to do? The dude may not have been an ogre, but he was still twice Philippe's size, and then some. The story was that Louis had once been a smooth in White City himself, but Philippe, who had a longer memory than most, didn't believe it. The two checked out the salvaging side by side, but Louis was already shaking his head.
"I'll take the motors," he said, "but the ogres don't want the rest of this rubbish no more."
Philippe felt sick. What was he going to tell the citizens? It had been the same for several cycles now, and they were getting kinder panical. "Why?" he asked.
"Just the way it is."
Louis loaded the motors into his trailer and handed over a box of turning veggies and a small sack of rice by return. Philippe felt his eyes begin to prickle.
"That's it?"
"That's it."
"But we're starvacious," the king protested. "Hungerized."
Louis sighed and fetched out one more browning cabbage.
"Best I can do," he said.
Then he reached into his denims, produced a small pack of baccy, and grinned broad and beaming. They rolled up and sat side by side on the tarmac.
"Kills the appetite, huh?"
Philippe pulled hard on his cig.
"Not really."
He offered the pack back, but Louis said,
"Keep it."
Head rushing from the smoke, Philippe plucked up his courage.
"You going up Electric Mountain?" he asked. "You going to deal with baby Lonnie and them?"
Louis nodded.
"Sure," he said. "They got what ogres need."
"Even after Lonnie broke rule number one and you helped him do it?"
Louis glocked his teeth, and Philippe immediately knew he'd gone too far.
"Not my business, Majesty,"
Louis muttered, and flicked his half-smoked cigarette. Philippe would have salvaged it, but the dude ground it into the tarmac, dispersing every shred of baccy. He was making a point. He remounted his motorcycle.
"See you on the up."
"Right, on the up."
The marketeer sped away on his three-wheeler to hook up with baby Lonnie and his dudes. He pulled up next to Electric Mountain. It was now so tall that its summit was almost level with the tarmac, like it was climbing out of the valley. Baby Lonnie and them had some good stuff all right, but Louis did his business double quick. Whatever he said to Philippe, he didn't like these smooths much and trusted them even less. If you didn't watch them close, they were all grabbing hands and thieving. It was as if they had gone kind of wild since leaving the White City regularity. And besides, he had an appointment at the FTZ, didn't he? So he had the deals done and dusted in 10 minutes flat. Louis full throttle back down the highway. He made the perimeter fence of the FTZ bang on time. But the woman was already there, cradling her unwanted against her breast. She was a Negro like him, which would make it easier. He adopted a swagger as substitute for age. He tried to remember her name.
"Kampamba?"
"You the one?"
"Who else?" he smiled at her. "Don't worry, my sister."
"What are they like?"
"Like?"
He did his usual shtick.
"They're rich. Big house with a garden. Servants, guards, the whole works."
She began to cry then. That was no good. They'd have security on them in a flash.
"I'm not sure," she spluttered.
Louis picked at the unwanted's blanket with a finger. The perimeter lights revealed a milky coffee complexion. He knew it was important to stay patient.
"So keep him."
She looked up, and her eyes were so big and so imploring that he had to turn away.
"My job," she said simply.
"So it's for the best," he replied.
It was done quickly after that, and Louis was soon walking away with 10 crisp dollar bills in his back pocket and the unwanted in his arms.
He looked back to see the woman on her knees, weeping terribly, her fingers tearing at the fence.
Mother of God, she repeated again and again, Mother of God.
God help you, Louis muttered.